So I do feel like there are a lot of people in the Points and Miles community that write about it, but don't really live it. And that's one reason, Katie, I love being on the road and love going through all this, all the hassle of booking travel, because we actually feel like we, you know, can connect with that process and like, what are the frustrations right now and the opportunities.
Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we welcome on the one, the only JT Genter. Did I get your last name right, or did I get that off? I'm looking at your facial expression and I got it wrong.
No, it's fine. It's Genter. As my grandfather would always joke, there's good, there's great, and then there's Genter. And so that's the way of remembering how I say it, but also kind of the pride that at least he has in our family.
Oh, that's
cool. He was a NASA scientist from like the V2 rocket all the way up to the space shuttle. So, you know, he could be kind of proud.
Oh man, that's awesome. We have space in our family too. My wife works on weather satellite. Well, used to work on weather satellites. Now works on other satellites. So definitely
we could
a lot
learn
of
about that.
Oh yes. But I don't know if everybody on I don't know if our listener base is looking for that kind of nerd out. Wish I'd have known that when we'll get there in a moment. You know, first of all, thank you so much for coming on. Before we dive into how we most recently ran into you and how this episode kind of came to be, why don't you share a little bit about you? I know that you have a really, really exciting and kind of like, it stresses me out thinking about it type story. You know, maybe not a quote unquote origin story, but, you know, as a digital nomad now, as we talked about with your hotel chain preferences, you didn't start out as a digital nomad.
No. So Katie and I met 20 years ago, almost exactly. We just hit our 20 year anniversary since the first night we met. Travel was kind of in our blood, even from the beginning. We met at an away Georgia Tech volleyball game. We're both big fans of Georgia Tech volleyball, but we both traveled to an away game. We met there. As we both started working for a team, we traveled with the team some and even traveled to see the team. So travel has always been kind of in our DNA. Katie went to the University of Texas at Austin for grad school. We were living in Atlanta. We both graduated Georgia Tech. We were moving out there. We decided to take a month off and travel the West Coast. So we flew into Los Angeles. We drove up to San Francisco, saw wineries, went on tons of hikes. We flew up to Alaska. We explored up there. We took a cruise down to Vancouver. It was just this big like pre-honeymoon that we took. And we're like, what if we did this for longer the next time we have to move? So we saved up and we figured when Katie finished her PhD program at the University of Texas at Austin that we would take a gap year. And we'd take this year where we would travel full-time and, work through savings while we did that. And actually, that's how we got into Points and Miles in the first place, is that we wanted to figure out how we could do that and really stretch our budget. So we got into Points and Miles, and then I started writing for The Points Guy back in 2015 because it gave me a shot. And I became a news editor, or news writer for nights and weekends. And that got my foot in the door of writing. At the time, I was a full-time tax accountant, a CPA. Ended up leaving that position in September of 2016 to start writing full-time for a Points Guy. And so the rest is kind of history. Katie hit graduation, she defended her thesis. We started traveling, and that was in June of 2017. So it's now been 7 years that we've been full-time digital nomads.
And you haven't looked back, I assume.
Yeah. We want to slow down, but we never we're not anywhere close to settling down.
Yeah, when you say slow down, just for our listeners' sake, I think we saw you in Frankfurt, and we'll get to that in a moment. I think you've been to like four or five other places in the time that we've talked, just trying to figure out when we could sit down and record with you.
It's been pretty crazy time. So yeah, I was actually in Germany for a couple of weeks before we met up, but then it's been a crazy bit of travel. So started off with Frankfurt to Mexico City. We were down there for a concert, a big milestone series from one of the DJs that does a weekly radio show called Above and Beyond. They've been one of my favorite DJ groups for a while. So we flew into Mexico City for that. From there, we went to Mexico City, Dallas, overnight to Madrid, and then Barcelona. We were in Barcelona for a night. We flew to Istanbul for a night. We were in Detroit for a night. And then we flew to Denver on Friday. And as we record this, it's Sunday. And tomorrow, Monday, we're flying down to Las Vegas. So it's been a crazy journey the last week.
Do you happen to be going to Zorkfest?
I am. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll probably see you there then.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Flying in Monday or stay at the Rio for like $36 a night. Katie's getting some
can't
final,
beat that.
I think Katie will actually finish off her Hyatt Globalist requalification for those 4 nights. So yeah, we're going to work from the Rio this week and then we'll be there for Zorkfest.
It's dizzying. And I had no idea that you'd been a digital nomad for 7 years. That's just an incredible feat. I am in a little bit of awe just because I think about, you know, what it takes, I think, to live out of a suitcase. And I imagine kind of the planning and kind of like the tactics and the strategies that you need to, you know, I guess have in your back pocket to make that all work. And it's interesting. And the funny thing is, you know, being in this community, like I do actually know quite a few people that are nomads. And whenever I see them, I'm always amazed. And I'm trying to think to myself, how could I live without all this junk that I have? And I'm like, I kind of have like a Ryan Bingham moment from Up in the Air or something. But at the same time, I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, I got too much stuff. I don't know. I would have to do a lot of purging, I think, to even approach kind of that digital nomad lifestyle.
So that's a great question. What's in JT's backpack?
Oh, that's a great question. What do you put in the backpack?
Yeah. So actually, when I was helping save Chicago seminars back in 2022, I was like, knew I needed to like help out and do a couple presentations. So that was one of the presentations I was thinking about doing was like, what is in our backpack? And I was like half jokingly going to just do the Ryan Bingham, like the like 2 minute speech that you see at the start where he's like, you know, imagine your house is in there and all these things. So you're carrying that around, feel the straps. So I was thinking about memorizing that, just starting that and seeing how many people knew the reference. But yeah, we actually have a ton of stuff in our backpack since we live out of it full time. Right now, we're on a trip to the Maldives. I think we're there in August. We're still carrying around our snorkels. So sometimes we just have random stuff that we're carrying around because we haven't circled back to. We have an RV, so we actually bought an RV during the pandemic. So that is a place where we're able to kind of drop stuff off. So all of our ski gear is there. We'll pick that up in December. We'll travel around with that through January, February, probably into March. So we do have a place that we have a bunch of stuff, and we can trade stuff in and out.
So you do have a home base, or you have at least a place to keep your stuff.
It's a mobile storage unit.
A mobile home base.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really nice. You know, every once in a while, we'll pull it out of storage. We'll go into the forests in North Georgia and just crash there. And it's just so very different than what we do for most of our lives. So it's actually really nice to kind of have that getaway.
Obviously, we all know a bunch of digital nomads just because of the nature of this community, which I think is absolutely awesome. It seems to me like there almost is a greater preference for actually traveling slower. I think like one of the first episodes of the podcast, we had a Milonomics community member on, and they would take 2 to 4 weeks in a particular place and really travel slowly, but really get to understand and you know, engage with that destination. You guys take a different approach. Do you ever like modify that approach? Will you know, you said that you were in Germany for a few weeks. Were you just in like one place in Germany, or do you still hop around, you know, different hotel every couple of nights?
The Germany trip, so much of our travels are kind of built around something that comes up. So for that Germany trip, there was award availability bookable through Virgin on Delta One for $50,000 before they killed off that sweet spot. And it was actually $5.60 rather than the $1,000 you have to pay now. And that opened up from JFK to Munich on like October 3rd or whatever. And we're like, well, that's Oktoberfest. So we booked it and we're like, I guess we're going to Germany now. So a lot of our travels are built around like something coming up. In December, we're going down to Kalala Island because 3 nights opened up. Actually, this was before it even left the Hyatt program. So we were able to book it with Hyatt points. And so, yeah, we're going down there for that. And we have Business Traveler Awards. I'm a judge for the Business Traveler Awards this year. So they have a event in Miami at the end of November. So we're going to that. We try to go to Atlantis each year on the free free stay, before gratuities and resort fees, is like $75 a night. So we try to take advantage of that every year, that through the Wyndham to Caesars match, and then using Caesars status to go down to Atlantis. So a lot of our travels are built around something, and then it's, okay, how do we connect these dots? So we would love to travel slower, but we have so much that we want to do.
Well, you know, you're following that bouncing ball, it sounds like. When did Kalala Island leave? And Kalala Island being that that island that used to be bookable through Hyatt off the Nicaraguan coast, right? You flew into Managua, and then you had to do, I guess, another hop, and then a long boat ride out in the ocean, I think.
It is. It's supposed to be open water. Like, you know, people say you'll probably get seasick if you're prone to it. It seems like a very interesting journey that we'll be on to go out there. But yeah, it's a domestic flight, hop, and a boat, and it's all included along with the stay. And I forget how many Hyatt points we paid per night. But yeah, so it was part of the Hyatt program through SLH, and then SLH was acquired by Hilton. So now it's bookable with Hilton, but it's 150,000 Hilton points versus 25 or 30K Hyatt points.
So that's just about parity, right? You know, between how much a Hilton point is worth versus a Hyatt.
Yeah, that's about right, I guess. All right, we are paid 40,000 points a night. I just looked it up.
Real-time validation here.
Yeah.
So anything else, like from, you know, being a digital nomad that you might want to share with our listeners, just, you know, strategies that you found that just work a little bit better, you know, whether it's, I suppose with the way that you travel, it sounds like you go where you find award availability and where you see opportunities. Do you feel like you find a lot of these close in or farther out, or, you know, could you give us a proportion between, you know, close in, medium, and like beginning of schedule?
Yeah. So actually, Kitty and I do post our travel schedule semi-publicly. We have a website that we started that started off as a blog spot. This is actually how we were blogging for like friends and family way back when we started traveling in 2011. Just, you know, the, like pretty much once a year trip I was able to take with the county. But now it's jtkitty.com. If you do /where, W-H-E-R-E, that has our upcoming travel schedule. Only the cities that we're going to be in, not the hotels. We actually don't post about what specific hotel we're going to be in until we've left that place. Unfortunately, people like to make phone calls and front desk, you know, someone asks for someone by name and they know that they are staying at that hotel, then they connect them. So it's kind of a sad reality. But yeah, so we're flying down to Vegas from here, and then we don't know where we're going from Vegas. We check out on the 2nd, which I think is this Sunday. Yeah. Or on the, check out on the 3rd.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh, Sunday's the 3rd, yeah.
The 3rd, yeah. So we have no idea where we're going to go there. So we might do a mileage run down to Southeast Asia to re-qualify for Star Alliance Gold status. We might fly back to Atlanta, get an RV. We might fit in Atlantis somewhere in here. But yeah, like, so sometimes we just don't know where we're going to be in a week from now. But then at the same time, I'm scrolling through here. We know we're going to Nuremberg, Germany in March for a robot soccer competition that we help run. There's a German Open in March. We'll be in Deerfield Beach in May for CardCon. So it's like sometimes we know like almost a year out where we're going to be on a particular day. Sometimes we don't know where we'll be in a week. It's all over the place.
It's exciting to see, you know, kind of how you're able to kind of opportunistically travel, which I'm very much in awe of, and also jealous because, you know, I love the idea of doing last minute travel. I wish I could do more of it. I will say having a standard W-2 kind of job does not necessarily, you know, allow for quite the amount of last minute travel that I would love. At one time, I was probably a little bit more capable of doing that, and I miss that a little bit, but at the same time, I'm living vicariously through you, man. That's great stuff.
You certainly do well for being trapped by a W-2 or, you know, limited by a W-2 job. But I remember those days. I worked in accounting for almost a decade. I remember, you know, only having 3 weeks of PTO and you know, taking off the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of like Thanksgiving. Be like, sorry, family, we're not going to see you for Thanksgiving because we're going to Hong Kong for Thanksgiving. And, you know, trying to take advantage of any days we can that string together to actually go travel. Certainly remember those days.
Let's just say that I believe, like many people in the community, maximize. So let no holiday or PTO day go, you know, unutilized. So I know Trevor feels the same, I'm pretty sure.
Leave no holiday behind. So speaking of leave no holiday behind, so we recently ran into you completely unplanned, which is ironic because like like when you said you were in Munich on the 3rd of October, I was in Munich on the 3rd of October with my family. And then we run into you just a couple of weeks after that in Frankfurt at the Lufthansa first class terminal. We were obviously maximizing using the Columbus Day holiday. And I think you had said that that was your first time. So I really love, you know, Tom and I have been there so many times. I mean, it's still so new to me. I mean,
is that a humble brag? Is that what that is? Is that a flex?
Well, I mean, it's just a Lufthansa first class, you know, type thing. I mean, there is a reason that we used to have, you know, that is the drinking game.
I think we might need to take a pause here. You know, listeners, I think we're going to have to retire Melbourne. Melbourne as the drinking game word. I think we're going to have to bring Lufthansa first class back into the rotation here. I know some, this will probably make some people happy and some people sad, but I'm sorry. As co-host of the Travel Stories podcast, I'm just going to have to make the official executive call. Lufthansa first class is now back as the Trevor drinking game. So we'll keep it there for a little while, at least, I think. And with that, yes. Drinking time.
I think that was like three or four sips right there. That editorial note was three or four sips right there. So JT, you know, and I don't mean that as a humble brag. I just mean it as, you know, it's something that I've chased. My wife and I have chased for many years, and we've been very blessed. We you know, we live in a hub that has multiple Lufthansa flights. We've been able to leverage that to the point where, you know, I've probably flown Lufthansa 418 more than any other numbered flight, I think.
That's incredible.
It's pretty dang awesome, I'll be honest with you. I think I've only flown it in business once. Every other time it was up front. But neither here nor there. So this was your first time. I just happened to be walking back from the bar with a glass of champagne at, I guess, 9 a.m. in the morning, as one does in Air World. And here you guys are walking in, and it was just serendipitous, I thought.
It was crazy that this was our first time. And actually, during the pandemic, when we were, you know, stuck in the RV at that time, I made a list of like all the products that like we haven't experienced. And I was like, we got it. Yeah, we got to go experience these things, you know, while it's still bookable for somewhat reasonable miles and while it still exists. I mean, you know, there's the Etihad apartments were supposed to be gone forever because Etihad was supposed to be retiring the A380. Thankfully, that was reversed. But we made a list of all these products, and Lufthansa First Class was definitely on there. But we finally were able to pull it off. We actually had been in Frankfurt before this time, where we were just kind of camping out there for a few days, waiting for any sort of availability to open up. And it never did, but I'm trying to remember where we had to be. So we ended up taking our backup flight out. That's the same thing we did this time. I flew in on Sunday from Berlin. Kitty flew in on Monday, and then we just kept extending day by day by day at the Holiday Inn that we were in Mainz, which is close to Frankfurt Airport. And so we just extended day by day by day until finally availability opened up. And it was the route that we wanted. We were flying to Mexico City for this concert anyway, so we were looking for this Frankfurt to Mexico City. Also, that while LifeMiles has devalued Lufthansa first class between the US and Europe, it's what, 120,000 now? Down to Mexico City, which is actually further, is actually cheaper. It's 96,000 life miles. So it's flying further and it's cheaper. So it is where we need to go anyways. So we were tracking that very carefully, hoping for award availability to open up, and it finally did.
Way to bury that little tidbit in there. I mean, Mexico City, there's a lot of little things in Mexico City or flying out of or to that I'll just say are pretty interesting, and I'm sure folks can kind of read between the lines there. So really, Lufthansa First Class has been a little bit of your white whale.
Yes, after I finally flew flagship first class on American Airlines, that was my white whale for the longest time. And the reason why I haven't experienced a lot of these first class products is by, you know, Kitty and I being digital nomads and flying and traveling all the time. I mean, there's a few years there where I hit 300,000 flown miles. This year I might hit 200,000, so a lot fewer miles, but we're paying for all these ourselves generally. These aren't being covered by anyone else. And so we're actually, you know, redeeming the miles. And so generally what that means is we are flying business class a lot. I actually was looking up some stats. I have flown economy more than I've flown business class in the 2 million miles that I've logged. But business class is 766,000 miles, where first class is only 85,000, which is still pretty incredible to have 85,000 first class. That's like Etihad Apartments, Cathay First, Emirates first class from Dubai to LA, which I think is one of the longest routes, if not the longest. So I've had some great experiences, but it's few and far between. It's certainly not all the products. So now, you know, Katie and I are trying to fit those in where we can.
I just point out, yeah, I'm one of these days, I'm going to have to kind of add up some of these stats, although that's going to probably be a lot of history going back through my emails and confirmation numbers, try to figure out. My one humble brag is I have yet to fly Lufthansa in business class. It's been almost an entire I thought this was going to be an end to that embargo, you know, where finally I would have to partake in some Lufthansa business class. But, you know, somehow we managed to pull a rabbit out of the hat, or, you know, to find our last minute seats on Lufthansa first. So, you know, we were in the same boat, I guess, in a way. We were watching the award availability like, I don't know. I feel like we were like bird spotters or something, you know, with binoculars. Or something.
So the interesting thing about that was we set alerts in Seats.aero. I set alerts in Expert Flyer. Which has just not been nearly as good as I don't even know if the alerts would have even worked, but like you could at least.
I was going to say, were you able to set them up?
I could have swore I set them up, but I had to set them up differently than I used to. And so nothing triggered. I don't know. That tool is questionable at best nowadays, unfortunately. I mean, I love the ability to see how many seats are left in a fare bucket, but I feel like that is like one of the last dying benefits of the tool. But
and I could go on for Expert Flyer for a while. But not even all airlines are available. Maybe I would fly Turkish Airlines. It couldn't see what the loads were like for Turkish Airlines. It's really losing its value. Like it's one of those tools that I continue to use because I know how to use like the remaining features. But man, I can't recommend it anymore.
I think of Expert Flyer in that phase kind of like how SeatGuru was. You know, it was like the go-to place, and then it's now complete trash. And I don't mean that in a demeaning way. It's just not useful at all. And so now you've got Airlopa. You know, that kind of came in. You were the one that actually shared that with me.
Oh, awesome.
I learned about it during your Chicago seminars talk. I'd never heard of that site before. That your talk at a Chicago seminars. I was like, oh, there's something to replace Siku. Awesome, because you know, obviously that's
a huge site
where you just seen the decline of something that became such a go-to, and then it's no longer the go-to. Unfortunately, it's funny how there is quite a little bit of a graveyard of travel tools out there. That I can think of off the top of my head, which is quite interesting.
We'll probably go on for a while. And Award Hackers one, like there's
ITA
Matrix.
It's kind of still works.
It's kind of limping. It's like that was probably the biggest hurt. That one is probably the biggest.
Trevor brings up a really good point, though, that, you know, I think I had a pretty high opinion of Seats.aero, you know, and some of the alerts and kind of what it's doing. I really do love that Lufthansa First tracker tool that they have, and it's available on their free site. You know, you don't even have to pay for it. But in a way, I guess some things you get what you pay for, because strangely, Seats.aero didn't see that space for a couple of days. And Trevor, you know, to his credit, you know, he was checking manually on united.com, I think, right? If I'm not mistaken, you saw that space very quickly and advantageously. And I think we were on it. We were literally like probably within, less than half an hour, we were booked and had seat numbers and everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, as they say, sometimes the old ways are best.
Yes. I was just going to say, it was just a good PSA, you know, of like just because Seats.aero says it's not there, doesn't mean you shouldn't double check. You know, you should be checking United and Aeroplan and a lot of these other places just because don't trust it, you know, because it's not always correct.
Especially for where both of us are sitting, like you guys wanted to take that specific flight. We wanted to take this specific flight. Like if you're just, you know, throwing a Seats.aero alert out for like any time there is Lufthansa First Class or my home airport to Frankfurt or whichever way that you want to search, and you're just kind of flexible and can hop on it. Like that certainly saves, you know, searching manually all the time. But yeah, I mean, us too. So Kitty and I had Seats.aero, we had several Seats.aero alerts set up for both business class and first class. None of them ever pinged. But Katie literally was getting up in the middle of the night to go use the restroom. And I was like, woke up, rolled over and grabbed my phone. I was like, might as well just check. And there was two seats in first class. And so it was like, you know, it's go time now. You know, throw the laptop open and get, you know, book it as soon as possible. Yeah, it's interesting that, yeah, how that is really good for finding some award availability if you're just super flexible. But yeah, there's, you got to search manually if you really want to find these. there's a lot of competition for it, as I found.
It is. And I used to know, you know, almost like, you know, you could almost set your watch to it when Lufthansa would release Space. And, you know, we're still finding it, but it is not nearly as consistent as it used to be. There were times where I could tell you with reasonable confidence that if it's F6, you know, if they're still selling six seats or more, that it's going to be, you know, 14 days out at this time.
14 days. Remember those days.
Well, even now, 4 days or 10 days. I mean, they started to kind of really, really spice things up. But let's get back to your experience. So here you are. You arrived into the first class terminal. I think you said that you actually like had a taxi drop you off at that upper deck rather than walking from the terminal like the rest of us peons have.
We figured we'd go through the whole experience. So we were staying again in Mainz, which is an S-Bahn away from the airport. And so we had taken, Katie and I had arrived separately because we were flying from different places. And so we had taken the S-Bahn to Mainz and we were crashing there for a while. But we could have taken the train and then walked through and then walked the path up that you guys are very familiar with. If we're in the area, we might as well just grab an Uber. So it's really funny. The Uber driver didn't speak, you know, wonderful English, which is actually kind of a rarity, as you guys have probably found in Germany. So many people speak English really well. But he was trying to clarify, is it Terminal 1 or Terminal 2? Like, well, it's first class terminal. It's like, just follow the pin. Like, I pinned the first class terminal. And so he seemed very skeptical, but he followed it and sure enough dropped us right out in that upper deck that you were talking about. And so we got the whole experience of like getting to walk in that entrance.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I haven't experienced that. I've actually really even stay in the city of Frankfurt, for that matter, as many times as I've been through the airport.
That's the really funny thing. Like, I think this time we were actually talking about whether or not we should like stay in downtown Frankfurt. Like, I put it out on Twitter, I think, and maybe in another group. And it's a resounding, no, you go to Mainz, you go to Wiesbaden, you go anywhere but Frankfurt. And like, I've been to Mainz as well. And I had the same experience. We just splurged on a taxi to be dropped off, you know, properly. But so you get into the lounge and obviously I ruined that welcoming experience because you're getting your briefing and you're like, hey, nice to see you. First time, go away.
I hope it didn't come across like that. But no, it was so like almost disorienting to be like, what are you doing here? Of course. And we're like, of course we're going to see someone here that we know. Like, you know, odds are someone is going to be in this lounge, I guess.
It's like Mecca for miles and points people. So, I mean, you know, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Have you run into other people there?
I've seen Brian Kelly. I'm trying to think if I've seen anybody else there. I feel like I should have run into Ben or Matthew Clint.
Oh yeah, he lives there. Like,
exactly. I feel like I should have seen them, but I think it was just Brian.
I'm now batting 1,000, so I, you know, my data point of 1 means I always am going to see someone there that I know.
Well, you know, it's not that surprising in a way. I mean, you know, we do know a lot of people, and you know, there are many of us, and we definitely have fairly mobile orbits of travel. So, you know, the chances are pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I won't even talk about this past trip because, you know, that was a unique
one. That's another episode I think we have to record, I think.
It is. It's in the backlog. So you enter into this world of German comm. I call it that. I mean, you hear the click of, you know, the heels of the staff. Because everything's tile. You look around, you see this just amazing bar. You see seats everywhere. The restaurant, I don't know if you noticed, you know, as you stepped in, the cigar lounge. I mean, this is just interesting standalone building. What was your first thought?
Surprisingly, it was like, oh, it's smaller than I thought. And I think that was because there was a rush at that time and it was packed. And I was really surprised by how many people were in there because I figured, you know, it was going to be this, you know, very calm and like very private experience. And you have the person that guides you all the way through. And we walked in and it was, I won't say mayhem, but like it was full and there was lots of people going in and out and all that. I got to experience that calm that you were talking about shortly later, once that first rush cleared out and it was practically empty. It was kind of a private experience, but it was kind of wild how many people were there at first and how small that made it feel. But again, this is only first class, like, you know, passengers, and, you know, I guess there's some elites that get to go there, but very
Han Circle members, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it makes sense that it's not the largest place. But as you start to explore, okay, there's a restaurant area and all that. Like, it is a lot larger than it looks at very first. But, yeah, that was surprisingly my first thought was like, oh, it's smaller than I thought.
So, I will say that was probably the busiest I've ever seen that lounge in all the times I've been there. And it was just because of that, 8 or 9 a.m. bank, I think, of flights. It was the first time that I was ever relegated to that left corner. Usually I'm like right front and center, like so where the restaurant is, you go to the window and you're overlooking the crews getting onto their buses, going to the planes. Those are like the seats I'm always there. I never have a problem within a margin of error of like, you know, two seats. You guys had kind of gotten comfortable and everything. I ended up doing something that I don't regularly do. I ended up buying cigars at the new Lufthansa store, which is a vastly improved duty-free store or Lufthansa store, whatever you call it. I mean, some of it, I think
the World Shop, I think, is
yes, the World Shop. And so I ended up getting cigars because I had never smoked a cigar in celebration of my daughter's birth, and she just turned 3, and I felt like I was a little overdue. And so we invited you, Tom, of course, joined me, and we extended the invite to you, and we were actually able to sit and enjoy the cigar lounge, which, you know, it was almost an experience of its own.
It sure was. Thanks for inviting me and sharing your cigar. That was the first cigar I probably have had in 15 to 20 years.
Same with me.
It's kind of funny, like how much like came back to me of like, oh, keep the ash and like, don't, you know, inhale deeply. You're supposed to, you know, swish it around in your mouth and like all the things I was trying to remember how to actually smoke a cigar. But that was, you know, kind of felt like the lap of luxury of like doing that at whatever it was, 10 a.m. in the morning, sipping on a drink as well. That was quite an experience. So thanks for sharing that with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, appreciate you joining us for that. So one of the things that I think a lot of people, well, maybe not a lot of people, people say the Lufthansa bathtub, you know, is the thing you want to do, like have a bubble bath at the Lufthansa First Class Lounge. Did you guys get the chance to enjoy that as well, or too little time?
Too little time, sadly. Because we smoked the cigar, and then we ended up having lunch with y'all, and then that went right into our. Thankfully, this is the only time I'm happy about a flight delay. Our flight was actually delayed by about 30 minutes leaving, so we got to have even more bonus time while we were at the lounge. But yeah, I didn't get a chance to do a bath, but I did ask the poor attendant if I could at least go in there to take photos. Because I wanted to at least have some stock photos for articles and stuff like that, but didn't actually get to have the full experience, sadly.
It sounds like you got a lot of experience, though. I think I'm well known for saying that Wiener Schnitzel is just absolutely incredible there. Just for my own self-edification, am I right from an unbiased first-timer?
That was incredible. And it was massive too. Like, but yeah, that tasted incredible. It's, you know, that perfectly lightly breaded, perfectly cooked. Yeah, that was some excellent schnitzel.
There wasn't anything left on my plate. I know that much. So, you know, and I thought it was interesting, you know, I think the agent that was helping you happened to also help us. And I think she was surprised that we, you know, kind of unanticipatedly, you know, or unscheduled, you know, happened to run into people we know. I guess it doesn't always happen very often at the first class terminal, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen to people in the community, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I just think that's the best part. I'm actually kind of surprised that we haven't run into more people there. But I digress.
Especially for times. Especially for the times you've been there. Yeah.
Absolutely. So one of the other really cool things of the Lufthansa First Class Terminal experience that is exclusive to the terminal, so far as I've been able to identify, is the fact that you go downstairs the entire time you're in a lounge, you don't have your passport. Little awkward for me. I mean, you know, the first time you get used to it, obviously, but then you step down to the downstairs on the other side, right? So like you take the elevator in, when you walk in, there's like a completely unconnected other side where they've got the vehicles waiting, you know, to take you to your plane. How was that experience? What vehicle did you get? You know, did you totally geek out on the tarmac? Did you get a nice long ride?
Not a long ride at all. It was actually one of the shorter ones. And sadly, we didn't even get it just got like a minivan. I mean, we had another guy who was in the first class terminal who's also going to our same flight. So we just piled into a van. I could see all the really nice cars lined up, but we did have plenty of time to geek out. The driver who drove us over took photos of the other guy who was also geeking out, as well as Katie and I in front of the 747. We were down there for probably 5 minutes just taking photos. We had no hurry to get on board. So that was a really cool experience. But the passport thing was very interesting. So Kitty and I we recommend to anyone who goes to Germany often, we have EasyPass, which is the border police in Germany has this registration program where I think it's probably certain nationalities, but Americans are one of them, where you can register with them and you can then enter the country as if you're German. So you can use the automated passport scans rather than standing in the long line. And it saved us so much time on certain arrivals. So we had done that to arrive in Munich. We'd scanned the passport. It was automatically like cleared. And so I went up to the border patrol agent and presented my passport for stamping. He said, oh, no need anymore. And I was like, okay, took him at his word. So then fast forward to the Lufthansa first class lounge and we're trying to leave. And they're like, you don't have an entry stamp. We can't let you know, when did you arrive and all that? And so it ended up turning into this whole interview that we had with the border police because I didn't have an entry stamp and I had to explain the whole situation. They're like, well, when did you come? They were trying to notate all that. So it ended up not being much to do about nothing, but I was kind of worried that we weren't going to be able to leave because I never arrived, or I didn't know how that was going to play out. But it turned out to be much ado about nothing.
So I will say I did have an experience going into Italy where I just got completely waved. My wife and I got completely waved in to, I think we were going to Rome, and like no stamps, nothing. And we ended up flying out of a completely different country in the EU. And all I said, they're like, where's the entry? And I said, they just waved us through. We went into Italy. And the guy just mutters something under his breath.
Those damn Italians.
Yeah. It was one of those kind of funny experiences. So were you guys on the normal livery? I know that when we got our car, we saw the retro livery, which I've actually flown. It's beautiful.
That was what we were on. Yeah, so we were on the retro.
Oh, livery. The classic livery.
Oh, I love that. I love that retro livery. That's the classic one.
Oh, absolutely. And that was another reason why we're spending so much time like getting photos on the tarmac is it's
oh, how wonderful.
Particularly beautiful bird. I mean, you know, all 747s are beautiful.
This is but that blue line.
Yeah, exactly.
So did they give you the kind of the cool experience where you go up the elevator and then, you know, the driver pretty much escorts you all the way until there's like a warm handoff to the flight attendant?
We didn't get that experience. We got up the elevator and like people were boarding and we just had to like join the flow, which was the crew was very welcoming once we got on board. We had an incredible crew, probably some of the nice flight attendants we've ever had, which seems to be par for the course with Lufthansa, right? You have a lot more experience than I.
I have to agree. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've had a Lufthansa first class, you know, attendant that wasn't warm and kind of friendly and really inviting, you know, more than I would think, you know, a Germanic airline, you know. So it's not exactly – there's kind of a stereotype, you know, of people from Germany that maybe they're a little bit more cold or something. But I have not found that at all. I think – I don't know if they go to school for it or if it's some sort of like training they do at Lufthansa flight school or something, but – of the many, many data points that I think between the two of us, Trevor, I'm speaking for you, but I know my data points are they've all been very, very friendly and warm, which is, again, a little different than what I think I would have thought culturally.
So well said, and I totally agree with you.
And very adaptive. That's one thing that I don't have that much experience in first class, but I had to do some reviews back when I was at TPG of Cathay Pacific First and Emirates and Etihad. I've you know gotten great experiences through that, but I had to like try to see how the flight attendants were adapting to my personality versus other personalities. That's when I flew Cathay First. I think it was in 2019 or 18, and the flight attendants just absolutely knocked it out of the park. Were super friendly and conversational with me, but then very formal with the person who was in front of me. That definitely wanted to have that more like formal luxury experience. And I was like, that is obviously training, but that's also like a skill that is really makes, you know, the whole Park Hyatt motto of luxury is personal. Like, it's so true. Like, it's not one size fits all. Like, you know, adapting to the passenger makes so much of a difference.
I guess they just have really high emotional, you know, intelligence. They just know that I want like a warm, friendly, you know, inviting kind of personality. They just somehow communicate that subconsciously somehow. But that's what I want. But I guess there are probably a lot of other people that want a different style. And maybe other German passengers or non-Americans want a different style of service. So that is interesting.
So talk us through that. You're flying Lufthansa first class for the first time. I know that we traded text pictures of the menus while we were in the air. How was that experience? Obviously, you know, caviar, I'm sure you just passed on that, right?
No, definitely had the caviar. It was incredible experience, top to bottom. Speaking of the lounge and that incredible bar, so Kitty and I, before we left for the van to the airplane, we got Johnny Walker Blue Label, because it seemed like that was the most expensive liquor there. The bartender, I don't think, had been classically trained on how to pour drinks. Is they just opened up the bottle and poured like about 4 or 5 ounces of Johnny Walker Blue in this cup. And I was like, well, that's a lot, but I'm also not going to let it go to waste. So there's a little bit of a blurness of like the departure meal and everything, especially once the champagne started flowing. The champagne was great on board, but the caviar service was really good. I'm trying to even remember what meal I had. It's been a couple of weeks. I've had a few experiences since then. But yeah, it was incredible food, incredible service. Just such a great experience.
Yeah, and who knew that Laurent Perrier Grand Cycle, if I'm pronouncing it right, they didn't want to work with British Airways, but they have no problem being the champagne of choice for Lufthansa at the moment.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
You get your LPGS. Yeah, it was a big to-do because they had it in the Concorde room, and it was a staple. There's a really cool person on Twitter, Speedbird Julie, and she was very verbose about her feelings of the removal of LPGS. Thought at the time was that they just didn't want to be associated with their airline travel, but now we're seeing it pop up in other places.
I saw your tweet too, Julie, sharing that the photo of the menu. I didn't know the backstory on that, so good to hear that. But dang, that's some good champagne. I don't have a very refined palate. You know, once you get past like a $40, $50 bottle of wine or champagne, like it all tastes good to me. Like, I don't have the refined palate of like knowing what's a $300. That was incredible champagne. Like even with my palate, I could tell that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you were able to enjoy it. That's yes. That's awesome.
A few bottles of it.
A few. Yeah. Well, it's funny. And when we flew it in May, they only had one bottle, one or two max. They had at least three because I think I drank at least two of them. So I contributed to drinking two of them, I should say. You know, other people were drinking. I think, Tom, you might have even had a glass.
I may have had a taste. I didn't make that big a dent. So you may have been the biggest contributor.
I mean, you know, the other side is I didn't see them having to go back to the business class cabin for Diet Coke. So, you might not have drank them out of that either.
Well, and they only had Coke Zero, I think, for the most part. But, I did try, I tried the dessert wine that they had, which I thought was very nice. It was, it was not very sweet, actually, which is kind of unique. Usually, those dessert wines are very, very sweet. This particular Riesling was a lot more subdued. And I really enjoyed it. And I tried the port, which at the insistence of the flight attendant, because he saw that I was trying it. Yeah, I was trying all the things that were on the menu that interested me. And they clearly saw that. And I was like, oh, well, you know what? You should really try this port too. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to say no. I had a little bit of vodka with my caviar. And there were many beverages drunk. Very many beverages were drunk on that flight.
As it should be. JT, any final thoughts on your Lufthansa first class terminal and flight experience?
I can't wait to do it again. So many experiences that, Katie and I will have with travel where the first time, you can read so much about like a place or experience, but actually doing it the first time can still be kind of overwhelming, and you only pick up so much. And, we of course knew to ask for the rubber ducks in the terminal. And like, there are certain things we knew we had to do. But we're looking forward to being able to do it again. And having gone through the experience once already to be like, okay, let's, you know, let's actually make time to go take a bath. Let's buy cigars to, you know, have another cigar in a cigar room. Or, you know, once you've kind of been through the experience already, you can, I feel like you enjoy it a lot more the second time.
Oh, absolutely. You feel like you can focus. You know, like it's kind of funny. Like I kind of had Tom on a schedule for this one. It was like, we got to do this. We got to do this. We got to do this. And I knew what we wanted.
It was very regimented. I was like, okay, I don't normally smoke cigars or drink from the bar, you know, before 10 o'clock, but you know what? That's what we're doing. And I'm like, okay. All right. All right, Captain. So.
So I wanted to shift a focus a little bit. So JT, we probably gleaned over it, but you're the editor in chief over at Award Wallet, right?
Sure am. Yeah. So been doing that for about 2 years. Been editor in chief of Award Wallet. I guess we kind of glossed over my whole history. Like, I did start with the Points Guy. I freelanced starting in 2015. I started full time freelancing in 2016, and then I was full time in January 2017. That fell apart in February of 2020 while I was in Hong Kong reporting on a novel coronavirus and how it was affecting travel. And I was told I was no longer, my services were no longer needed there. But one of the first places that reached out and I started with was at Award Wallet. At first, I was the assistant editor, kind of helping Eric Paquette, who's the editor in chief at the time, run the site, assign stuff out, edit stuff, do some writing. And over the years, I just kept on taking more and more roles until, yeah, in October of 2022, got the chance to formally take on that editor-in-chief role. So I've been doing that for about 2 years now.
It's just been so fun to watch you and your progression and your writing, candidly. So you've been in the community for a long time. You see it from, you know, both an employment perspective as well as a hobbyist and member perspective. You also get the opportunity to chat with people that, you know, Tom and I might not often get the chance to. What do you see as far as kind of an outlook for, you know, the next, I don't know, year or two? Everybody says that, you know, there's just a progression of, you know, is it going to stay the way it is? I've been saying that there's a cliff since September of 2021, and the cliff has never come. You know, the award availability has just not gotten easier. Where do you see, you know, miles and points and travel going?
This Lufthansa first class experience being front of mind is definitely a reminder of just how it's changed, because I feel like that, you know, back in the day, right, you know, you could book that reliably 14 days out. But now I feel like it's been written about so much, and the social media influencers have written about this. And so, like, there's everyone kind of knows, like, the at least the written thing of like 3 days out, or a lot more people, I feel like, know Lufthansa first class is awesome, know that you can book it through LifeMiles or the different ways you can book it. I feel like there's a lot more people that know about this. And so it's a whole lot harder to find the award availability. And what I also found out is there's very few people that are sharing the actual tips. Like, hey, check at 4 p.m. Central European time and check at 9 p.m. Central European time, because those are two times that it can open up. That was something we learned just by going through that experience. And I find that a lot of those little hacks like that, which we can share with your listeners, I feel like those aren't being written right now. Like, some of the best sweet spots and the best ways of booking stuff, like, the people who are writing about Points and Miles choosing not to write about it because they don't want to kill it off, or they just don't go through the experience themselves. And I do feel like there are a lot of people in the Points and Miles community that write about it, but don't really live it. And that's one reason, Katie, I love being on the road and love going through all this, all the hassle of booking travel, because we actually feel like we, you know, can connect with that process and, like, what are the frustrations right now and the opportunities.
I love that. You're not just writing about it, you're living it. So you're in the thick of it. You're on the ground, you're in the bunker, and not just, you know, kind of writing about it from, you know, your home office or, you know, in theory. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So do you see anything getting better, or you think we're pretty much in that situation of, you know, the people that know are going to know, and they're not, and it's going to be a harder challenge for, you know, new folks to get into it?
I feel like the situation for the past few years, and what I think will continue, is, like, making those relationships and getting in those groups where people are sharing those airfares are still happening. You know, secret flying used to be something I would follow all the time, and they would post, you know, these airfares that maybe they found through Flyer Talk or whatever source. But like, I feel like there's not as many airfares that are really going out to the whole community. I feel like it's very much, you know, small communities, small groups will find award availability or an error, a pricing error on an award or something, and it's shared within that group. And so I feel like that's really the key, is like networking and getting into the groups that you can get into and, you know, sharing those tips, you know, where you can.
I definitely feel like, you know, that some of that information, definitely the free flow of that is maybe impeded a little bit, you know, and part of it is, you know, as the popularity of some of this stuff increases, you know, yeah, people are going to be a little bit more close hold on some of this information. You know, the other thing is, you know, obviously, you know, airlines themselves have changed. You know, I think Dave told us they're going to monetize, they're going to do less upgrading. You know, they want to sell these things, you know, these premium seats that we lust after, you know, here in the miles and points community. The interesting thing is, I think we're kind of running into this, two different forces kind of mixing. It's almost like I see the water churning. You've got, you know, the tide coming in and the tide going out. You know, where you've got, you know, companies that have business plans around trying to make money off premium cabins. At the same time, you've got, I think, the economy, you know, maybe not being in exactly the best shape. And, you know, we hear stories of, you know, business class cabins going out, you know, completely empty or like one or two seats. And they're happy to do that. You know, it's kind of the same thing with hotels. You know, we hear stories of hotels. I think some of this is what we heard when we were talking to Richard Kerr a couple of weeks ago. You know, how, you know, companies are much happier to defend their inventory or defend the product rather than giving it away, you know, to people who may be at least providing some kind of, you know, reimbursement, whether it be through miles or other things. So it's interesting to see. I mean, I'm kind of curious if you think 2025 is a year that some of this breaks. You know, maybe we'll see some more opportunities, or are we just going to see more of the same where, you know, it's going to be harder and harder?
And something that's also been kind of a systematic issue for the past, I feel like, few years is Boeing has forgotten how to manufacture aircraft. Like
that doesn't help. Yeah.
And so it's created a systematic issue where, like, airlines would love to buy planes, would love to expand routes, would love to have, you know, a lot more lift, but they don't because they can't get the aircraft. And so I feel like that's also what's creating these full cabins, is the cabins are going out full because there's not enough aircraft. The airline would love to do a daily frequency on that rather than four times a week, but they just don't have the aircraft. And I feel like, if, you know, Boeing can learn how to manufacture airplanes again, then maybe we can have more airplanes, which would mean more seats, which would mean hopefully more award availability. But I feel like that's been kind of the issue that we've had for the past couple of years. I had the revenge travel that definitely filled cabins for a while, but it's just a lack, of aircraft.
Let's be fair. Airbus has had a problem too. I think Qatar was refusing acceptance of a bunch of A350s. And then I think, if I recall correctly, Cathay found some problems in their engines. And then Malaysian Air did some research as well. This was reported by Seth over at, I think he's Pax Aero. I always know him as Wandering Air Man.
You could blame some engine manufacturers too, you know, between Pratt and Whitney geared turbofans and Rolls-Royce engines being offline. You know, I think there's probably a good amount of blame to go around the entire, aerospace manufacturing industry for that matter.
So true. So true. I mean, you know, and United is a great example of still trying to do new routes. I mean, who would have thought you'd have the opportunity to fly a 737 from Tokyo to Ulaanbaatar?
I might just have to do that. Kenny, I actually took a United award into Ulaanbaatar back in 2017. It was one of the first, it was actually the first award that we took, I guess, after we went nomadic. It was back when you used to be able to stop over in South Africa on the way from the US to Japan. So we did. So we stopped over in South Africa for
a couple of weeks. As one does.
Yeah, as one does. We did the Island Hopper and all that. So we really stretched out the award. All of that was an economy because, again, we were very much economy flyers for when we started. Not so much anymore. We try to avoid it when we can.
Well, hey, JT, I think I can speak for Tom as well, and he'll speak for himself. But thank you so much for coming on. This has been a really fun hour.
Yeah. I can't believe it's already been an hour.
Well, it didn't feel like it because, you know, it's always, it has been a pleasure. And, you know, having these kinds of, you know, insightful discussions talking about, you know, shared experiences is just, you know, what we love to do. And it's so great having you and being able to, you know, kind of experience First Class Terminal with you as well. I think that was a real treat and something you don't get to do every day.
It was. Well, we might have to plan another one. If we can find
yeah, maybe we'll try to plan it this time. I guess we can only plan it 4 days in advance, though, or so.
Might be able to do that. Yeah, why not?
Why not?
So, JT, could you tell our listeners where they can find you?
I am at JT Genter, so JTGENTER on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, although I'm not on Facebook that often. Pretty much anywhere. I'm not TikTok because I'm an old man now, 39. But like pretty much anywhere there are handles, I'm at JT Genter or I'm not there.
Don't worry. I don't think any of us are on TikTok. You're in a safe place.
Yeah. It's okay. At least you're not being called boomer all the time. You know, some of us get accused of being a boomer, even though I'm not anywhere. Anyway, that might've been on a previous episode.
Well, JT, you're welcome back anytime. We'd love to have you. And again, thank you for coming. And with that, I think we'll close out the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.